You know, if you email your audience once every 6 weeks, that I think that's a mistake. People are going to forget that they opted into your list, and then they see an email from you out of nowhere and they kind of forgot who you are. They're going to think that you're just a spammer.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Welcome to superfastbusiness.com. And this is a business case study series with me and my special guest for this entire six-part series, Matthew Paulson.
Hey, James, how are you?
It's good to be speaking again. We've already done a few episodes together. We did the AdSense episode and we did the email subscription model episode, and we'll link to both of those in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And you and I have decided to put together a six-part series, and we'll be doing a kind of a mini masterclass on some of the topics that aren't commonly discussed because, let's face it, a lot of people don't really have knowledge on it. And we'll be going through some amazing topics, everything from growing and monetizing email lists right through to how to plan which projects to work on, selling a website, building revenue very quickly, name changing a business, and then we'll go into some deeper level monetization tips. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
Okay. So part one of our six-part series is how to grow and monetize an email list of 250,000 email subscribers. And you have some significant experience in this. Your website, marketbeat.com, has 250,000 email subscribers. You send out 10 million emails a month, and you're doing revenue in the multiple millions. And it's very exciting that you've got this in play. Let's see if we can find out how this works.
Absolutely. You know, if you want to build an email list, you can't just put an opt-in form on your website and say, hey, this is, you know, I've maxed it out. I think that's a mistake people make. They put up the pop-up form, they hook it up to MailChimp, and they say, oh, I'm only getting 100 subscribers a month. That's all I can possibly get. The reality is there are just so many different ways to get, you know, email opt-ins that people neglect and don't even think about, and many of them they don't know about. So you could have a crappy form on your website, you know, to get email addresses, you might only be getting a couple hundred a month, and you could just be leaving a lot of emails on the table, and in turn, you know, leaving a lot of revenue on the table as well.
Let's just talk about for a second here why we're building emails, because I think still some people are overlooking this whole concept of actually building an email list. Let's go right back to square one. Why did you decide to build the email list?
Sure. So if I have somebody's email address, I can get in touch with them at any point in the future. So if Google slaps me in any way and sends me no more traffic in the future, I can still make money because I can always email my list and sell them something. Having somebody's email address, you know, is permission to send them content and sell them stuff. So if somebody's on my email list, I can make money off them, even if everything else, you know, goes to hell in my business. There's always the opportunity to sell them something new.
So it's more or less an asset.
Very much so. I mean,
and it's a very powerful communication channel.
Yeah, I know that every email that I get in my list is worth about $7 to me. I mean, you're not going to get an ad click that's $7. So it's, you know, if you can get as many of those as possible, that's just good revenue.
Exactly. And when you say $7, do you mean forever or per year, or how do you measure that?
Lifetime. So it's between the advertising revenue that an email address will generate and then, you know, paid subscriptions as well. So I've done all the math to figure that out. And I know, you know, I can pay anywhere up to $7, and I usually pay $2 or $3 to buy an email address. So the ROI is pretty good on, you know, doing advertising to get emails.
Well, that is, it's really interesting. Like through this series, we'll be sharing some reflections from your experience and sometimes from mine as well. In your case, you have 10 times more emails than I do. You have 250,000. Mm-hmm. I have about 25,000. My email subscribers are worth $100 per email per year. So my value is, you know, amazingly, it's almost 10 times more. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. And by the way, almost exactly the same revenue.
Yep.
And I'm sending about 10 times less emails per month. So isn't it interesting how you can find, you know, different levels. So that gives someone a scale they might work towards. You're going to have a high yield small list. You're going to have a lower yield high list, but the numbers will sort of factor out. And you could probably have a high yield high list if you get things right and stack a few ideas together. And I'm sure you can have a high list with a very low yield as well. And that's probably the norm in the internet marketing space, I know people have lists of 500,000 or 600,000 emails, but they barely get someone to open it, and they get decimated in any kind of affiliate competition by people with tiny lists with a huge punching weight. So it'd be really interesting to reflect on how this works. In terms of what, we're talking about you having email subscribers in some kind of database. Is that right?
That's correct. We have, you know, we do some very specialized stuff with our email list, so we can't use MailChimp or anything like that. So we just have a, you know, a SQL database, and then we do our email delivery through SendGrid. But it's, you know, pretty much the same idea as MailChimp or AWeber or any of those things.
Right. So we're going to put the geek alarm on there. SQL database.
Yeah.
That means you've basically got a custom program.
Yeah. Everybody gets a different newsletter. So it's not like we could just send out one newsletter to everybody, because everybody gets a customized version of it.
Do you think what you've created is quite complex and would be hard to replicate?
I think so, because there's a lot of different pieces that go into it. There is, you know, the customer acquisition, the lead generation part. There is the product development and sales part. There's the email marketing part. There are other people that have tried to copy parts of my business, but they don't see the whole thing, so they can never, you know, really get close to what I'm doing.
Exactly. So the idea of a podcast like this is we're going to, you know, peek behind the curtain, see what's happening, not so that someone can rip you off, but so we can get some perspective. And certainly, if you want an off-the-shelf email system, the type that I use, then you could easily do the sort of things that I'm doing, because my systems are almost completely off the shelf. So you've got the scale of instantly available through to very hard to replicate and complex, which is sort of the fun thing to talk about, the differences. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how people get onto your email list. We should probably cover some of the, you know, the obvious points where people would enter your email list, and what sort of promise you're making for them, and the process that you go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, obviously website opt-ins are going to be just about everybody's biggest source, you know, of new emails. And I think I see a lot of people doing this wrong. You know, people like you and me in the internet marketing space, you know, people that are technology focused, we hate advertising. We hate things that are pop-ups or intrusive, you know, we think are intrusive, so we just don't do them. So you might only put like a sidebar opt-in form on your website, or you might put something, you know, below the post, but you know, you're really leaving a lot of opt-in forms, you know, a lot of opt-ins on the table by doing that. If you don't have an opt-in form that people see right away, most people are just going to miss it. You know, so I think if you have scruples about, you know, not having a pop-up because you think it's annoying, or not having a welcome gate or anything like that, you know, it's just shut up about it for a week and try it and see if you like the results before you say no to that.
Right. So what are you saying is the shortcut? Someone starting out fresh, they got a blog, haven't really thought too much about emails. What would be your first move?
So the two keys are to have an opt-in form that's visible. So just go ahead and do an entry pop-up, and then do opt-in form right below your post. So after somebody's done reading the post, they're going to want something to do next. You know, give them an opt-in form right there to get their email address.
Fantastic. Yeah, we've done comprehensive testing for our site, so in our sort of market, and we found that having an opt-in on the footer wasn't very good, but above the option menu works really well. And we've also had very good stuff when we put people, you know, put in content links like get the transcription, very relevant, high opt-in rates, and we're using things like lead boxes for that. Very, very effective.
Yeah, and it's going to vary, you know, on your industry and, you know, what your template looks like, and, you know, what works for me is not going to be what works for James, and what works for James might not be what works for you. So it's really something you got to try. But, you know, when you get started, a lot of people have had success with an entry pop-up. So just do that. And then, you know, below the post is a place to start to try too. And, you know, you go find other stuff will work well over time too. So it's, you know, start with that best practice and try other stuff to see if something else works better.
And on my site, well, I take into factors things like that 65% of the people are repeat visits. So I've got this bar at the top, like a hello bar, but it's a custom coding on our site. And that gets a lot of opt-ins. It's like just a red call to action. It's there all the time. That's one of the primary sources for people to get a course. So let's talk about, we've talked about placement. What are you actually offering people?
Yeah. So our lead magnet is our free daily newsletter. So we, you know, sell a freemium product. So we sell a free newsletter and we have a paid newsletter. And our lead magnet has always been the free newsletter. The key is just to, you know, make that whatever your offer is, if it's a video, an ebook, whatever, is just to make it relevant to the content on the page. So I know that if somebody is reading an article about Bank of America, the company, I better mention that you know, Bank of America in my pop-up opt-in form for that page. You know, so whatever you can do to make your lead magnet and the messaging of your pop-up or whatever opt-in form you have to make it as close to your page as possible, you're going to be more likely to get opt-ins.
It's so true. The best opt-ins we have is our lead boxes, which to download the transcription PDF for the article. So it's hyper-relevant because it's exactly related to the article. And my team have a simple standard operating procedure, or SOP, where they just replicate a lead box. Every time we put a new post, they create a brand new lead box that links people straight to that resource. So they opt in and they get sent the transcription PDF to their inbox. And that process gets, mm-hmm. you know, 80% opt-ins. Anyone who clicks on that lead box, 70-something, 80-something percent will actually enter their email address. And using a bit of technology, you can pre-populate those fields. If they're already known to us, it'll put their email address in there from the screen, which is fantastic. So it's about reducing friction and making it easy for people to opt in.
You know, regardless of what your website is about, you know, don't just have one lead magnet. Have five or six and then show the right one based on like the category of content in. So you might write about five or six different things, and then, you know, a good pop-up form script can show, you know, can specify, you know, I want to show this lead magnet on this category in WordPress or this one on this one. So you can have a few that are more targeted and relevant versus just having one for everybody. And I think that is a pretty good game plan for people getting started.
It's a great suggestion. That's why we have on our top opt-in is a general course, which will apply to everyone coming to my site. It's like how to make more profit. I also have Own the Race course, which is a general course, and I have Wealthification, which is more the business category. So there's three separate general courses that people find through different paths, and all of them have their own direct URL where I can send people to what's called a squeeze page where there's really no distractions. Mm-hmm. And they're also available as lead boxes in various parts of the site. And then we have our in-text lead boxes. So, you know, just from both you and I have five or six minimum different ways that people can give us their details. And of course, let's talk from the technical perspective. When they do opt in, they're not getting the same generic stuff straight out of the gate. I imagine that you have some kind of special sequencing or tagging or sequence that will apply to people depending on what they opted into. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's totally the way to do it now. You can't just have one general autoresponder series. You need to have one based on, you know, the content they receive or the content they signed up for. You have to be very specific. You know, the relevancy is the name of the game now in email marketing. So if they signed up for something, you know, about website building, they should get emails about website building. And, you know, the more, I guess, granular you can get with that, the better.
I agree. It's relevancy and context. So one thing, a simple thing that we do that's replicatable is someone opts in to a course, a multi-part delivered course. And by the way, just as an aside, I changed from a PDF guide or cheat sheet, which was 19 pages, to a multi-part course, because what I found was when I was scrubbing my email list, which is under the topic of list hygiene or culling non-responsives, a lot of people were opting in for a free report but never opening a single email after that. They were using throwaway addresses, etc. Mm-hmm. But I found a multi-part sequentially delivered course implies future contact, and you can also tag on there and receive news. But what we do is we hold people out of our general broadcast until the course has been delivered in full, and then we put them back into our main course. So I'm wondering if you do something similar to that.
Yeah, I tested that a while back to, you know, send the autoresponder series and then, you know, only send broadcast emails out after that. It didn't work quite as well for us to have people wait, so we just canceled that split test. And everybody who's on the list, whether they signed up, you know, yesterday or 5 years ago, you know, they'll get any broadcast email we send out, as long as, you know, they, you know, we'll kick people off if they haven't opened anything in 6 months, but otherwise you'll get the message.
Right. So there you go. It's a good example of different approaches getting results that work mm-hmm. for the individual.
Yeah.
So what happens with your news? Now, first sort of obvious question, to build such a big list, how long did that take you, and how many visits are you getting to the site to enable that volume to be so high?
Yeah. So we started collecting opt-ins in about 4.5 years ago. A lot of that growth has been within the last 12 months, just because we've really scaled up, you know, the amount of traffic we get, you know, the amount of content we produce, you know, we've scaled up our advertising to buy email addresses or buy leads. So right now, let me look at my numbers. It's coming up quick.
Sure.
In the last 90 days, we've had about 60,000 organic opt-ins, and we've also bought another 30,000 paid opt-ins.
And where are you primarily buying opt-ins from?
So we do co-registration advertising. Are you familiar with that, James?
I am. It's where you sign up for something and then there's like a thank you page with a list of other things you can tick a box to receive information for.
Yep. There are a few companies that do this. It's big in the finance and investing space, so it's really easy to buy those. Like in the internet marketing space, I know Tim Berkwin with AfterOffers, he does co-registration for that industry. I don't know if you know that, but he does. So I know that you could buy leads for like a dollar in the internet marketing space from Tim, you know, through his partner websites, you know, through co-registration advertising. So, you know, we do that. Our biggest, you know, we buy them from, you know, some big name websites like thestreet.com, Jim, you know, it's Jim Cramer's website and a bunch of other well-known financial places. You'll probably see an ad for MarketBeat. If you ever, you know, go to a big name finance site and you see a co-reg ad, you'll probably see our unit there. So we can spend, you know, $2 to $3 for an email address and make, you know, $7. So over the course of about a year and a half. So that's a pretty good ROI on an advertising spend, I guess, in my opinion.
Exactly. And I'm certain if I started buying co-registration leads that my $100 per customer is going to be blown out of the water just because of the smaller concentrated organic approach I've taken. When you start having paid traffic, you really got to know your numbers, which you clearly do. And a lot of marketers don't. So let's talk for a second.
Is there a reason that you haven't done co-registration advertising yet?
There is. There is a reason I haven't done it, but it's not something that would stop anyone else from doing it. It's a different reason altogether.
Okay.
But certainly in the past, I've tried every possible paid traffic method, including like e-zine, inserts, et cetera, and I've found many of them to be effective.
Like what are some of them that have worked well for you?
Basically putting an inline ad in an email magazine, like for Alan Gardine's email system, that worked well. And I've had ones where I take forum ads and sponsorships in private communities. I've used forum signature links. I've done e-zine articles. I've done US free ads back in the day. I've done all types of paid things from 7Search through to AdWords and Facebook, even when it was brand new. I was one of the first people advertising on there. These days you can have things like Twitter and LinkedIn, etc. But for now, I'm just going to purely organic. I don't even have an affiliate program, and it's fine. So it's a lot of to do with choices around the kind of business you want to build. But I can see in your business, for your model, it makes a lot of sense. How many visits do you get to the site for you to be able to generate 60,000 organic leads in the last 90 days?
Yeah, it's between 2 and 3 million page views a month. So it's quite a bit. Our opt-in rates aren't great. You know, it's only about 1%, but that's just because the industry we're in. In the finance industry, people just read a ton of different content. They sign up for a ton of different lists. So that's just the nature of the industry we're in.
Well, it's quite a general, like it's a broad market you're in, and it makes sense that it's high volume. So a lot of people listening to this would have substantially less traffic. Even in my case, I'm sure we probably get no more than 100,000 visits a month. So it would take, you know, it would take us 10 times longer, literally, to build a list 10 times bigger, unless we change something else or force feed it with some paid traffic. So let's talk about the next phase. You've got the email address and you're sending out newsletters, and you mentioned you have a freemium model, mm-hmm. and we'll explain what that means. Basically, people can get something for free, but the meum part is the premium part, which they're going to pay for something. How does this part work?
Yep. So with our free newsletter, you can follow two stocks and you can, you know, get news and updates about them in your daily newsletter. And then with the premium one, it's $15 a month. You can follow as many as you want. You get the newsletter earlier in the day. You get some more customizability about your newsletter. You can get email and SMS alerts for your stock. So it just has a lot more usable than a free newsletter is. And, you know, about 3% of our free subscribers will convert to, you know, paid eventually, which is ends up, you know, being some pretty good revenue. I think we get about $500,000 a year in just subscription revenue from people that buy that product. So it's been a nice little business. I have found there is a lot more customer support than I expected. I had to hire somebody to kind of manage that for me, but it's definitely a good business because, you know, nobody can really take that away from you. So it's going to be there as long as you keep delivering, you know, a great product, you know, to that customer base.
So let's talk about the flow. Someone opts into your email, whether it's via a co-registration or somewhere on your website, when do you start making these offers?
Then, like, probably the next day after they sign up.
So it's not even on the opt-in form or?
It used to be. So we found that, you know, co-reg is just the best monetization opportunity for a thank you page. We can make, you know, 80, 90 cents for every new email sign up just from the co-reg unit we run on our thank you page. So we don't promote our product on our thank you page anymore. But the next day after they sign up for our newsletter, they will get an email introducing our paid product. And, you know, over the course of the next 60 days, there's an autoresponder series that, you know, does all the usual stuff, you know, testimonials, you know, an FAQ email, endorsements, you know, products and features, and, you know, all the usual product launch formula type emails are in there. And, you know, by the end of the autoresponder series, about half of the people that will ever convert in that first 60 days.
Nice. So again, this autoresponder series at the same time as their news.
Yeah. So sometimes they might get two emails a day.
And does every single news broadcast have the offer?
Yeah, it's in the header and then the footer of it switches up. So, you know, each day of the week, it's something different, but it talks about the features and benefits and has like a link to a free trial to sign up.
Right. And one of the best examples of that I've seen is Sovereign Man. They do a really good job of offering every single email and very frequent emails. In my case, we have news blog posts and updates and content. Every time we let people know there's new content, they're sent to the content. Every single piece of content has a call to action. It's part of our standard operating procedures. You'd be hard-pressed to find a blog post on my site that doesn't let people know how they can get more value or take the next step. So it's kind of a long-line fishing technique. And over time, and it really can take time, it can in some cases take years for people to get that dripping tap. Eventually, they'll take the next step. They'll, you know, something will just dislodge or they'll resonate with the post. And by also doing a weekly digest, we found that we bunch up the week's worth of posts, we put a week's worth together in one summary post, and we've given people a choice to opt into a weekly email instead of the daily one so that they can get the frequency that they want without having to leave my email list. It's kind of like the parachute or the safety net. If they can't handle the daily stuff, they can opt in for the weekly, and the weekly digest is a nice little gathering of the top tips, and we can literally send an email out that has six different topics and one of those might be of interest. Do you have multiple calls to action in any of your emails?
Yeah. So in our newsletter, there's usually two to three spaced out between, and then in our dedicated sends or, you know, email blast to our audience, there's typically, you know, in the first paragraph, we try to have a link, and then, you know, right above the signature line, we have a link, and then below the signature, there's another link. So I found that maximizes the click-through rates to whatever content we want to, you know, promote. I try not to promote more than one thing in any given email. You know, that might work for a newsletter, you know, with promoting different blog posts. But, you know, if I want them to buy something, or if I want them to go to a piece of like a single piece of content, I try not to confuse, you know, the topic of the email. I just try to focus on, you know, the one thing. And if I need to promote something else, I'll just send a different email the next day.
Gotcha. Yeah, what I found, again, different experience, is I've used the PS signature almost exclusively to sell my live event, and we sell 200 tickets at around $1,000 each from the PS file of our regular blog posts. It's just like a by the way, hey PS, there's an event happening in March. So it can be quite different to the blog post topic, but that's a prominent piece of real estate that I think everyone should utilize. So what do you do in terms of the email list where you have little black holes, like people stop opening emails because they've got so many emails coming into their inbox or they change email addresses? What sort of list hygiene do you do?
Yeah, we do a lot. So we take if somebody bounces, you know, their email address goes bad, or if they do a spam report, we'll just take them off the list, you know, right away automatically. I think a lot of ESPs will do that for you, but we do that. So I don't want if anybody's going to spam report my emails, if their email just isn't valid, I don't want them on my list. And then I also check for signs of life. So if people are opening my emails, that's great. You know, I'll send them stuff forever. But if nobody opens something in 6 months, they'll get a couple of emails saying, hey, we noticed you haven't opened our emails in a while. Click this link to keep your account active. Otherwise, we're going to remove you from the list.
And do you get much email churn?
Yeah, it's probably our list is churn is probably 3 or 4% a month, just because, you know, we do send a lot of email and it's not for everybody. And, you know, people kind of get onto different financial lists and get off of them, get back on them. So it's just part of the industry we're in.
Yeah, I think it's anyone with an email list is going to experience people leaving. What would you say to someone who's reluctant to hit send on their email because they're worried that people unsubscribe?
Yeah, you know, when I first started doing the paid product, I took every cancellation personally. It's like I thought, you know, this is got. I must have done something wrong. I must have pissed them off. And you can't let yourself get hung up on stuff like that. You got to think of an unsubscribe as somebody that is, you know, just going to your website and then they leave. And, you know, that happens all the time. You don't think about it. It's kind of the same thing with an email list. That just doesn't mean they hate you. Doesn't mean you're a terrible person. Just means, you know, I don't want to get that email right now. And, you know, that's okay if somebody unsubscribed.
Yeah, I used to take it personally too. And I would send an email like once every 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Very, very infrequently. Yeah. People would actually chase me down and say, hey, everything okay? I haven't heard from you for a while. And yeah. In the end, I just realized that if I don't send emails, I can't help people properly because they're not going to find out about solutions that will get them to a better place. So it's sort of,
yep.
I should send them an email and let them know. It's kind of like when I'm a rabid consumer of something, I want them to send me emails. Like I'm very interested in surfing and I really want to get my daily surf report. And I don't mind if they let me know about a new wetsuit or a surfboard because I'm interested in that stuff and I'm not going to – oh, damn it, they're trying to sell me surf equipment and I'm a surfer and I do buy this stuff anyway. It seems ridiculous when you think of it from the point of view of a customer.
Yeah, and it's a mistake not – you know, if you email your audience once every 6 weeks, that I think that's a mistake. People are going to forget that they opted into your list and then they see an email from you out of nowhere and they kind of forgot who you are. They're going to think that you're just a spammer, you know, trying to sell them crap that – you know, you have no relationship with them. I think if you have a list that's of any size, you have to email them at least once a week, you know, just to keep them active, really.
I agree with you. And you mustn't ever email people who didn't ask to be emailed, yes. Which is something I still every day receive emails from people who have got nothing to do with anything that I've ever expressed an interest in. It seems to be some kind of a racket where people just gather email addresses and start sending out sort of viral invitation type things.
Yeah.
So monetization tips. Let's round this episode out. It's a quick recap. We've talked about the fact that you've built a large email list. We've given some specifics on sizes, yields, volume of emails, systems being used, what sort of promises being made, where you put the opt-in, what you send them, when you offer them, whether you segment them, partition them. We've talked about the number, the percentage of people who might take an offer, how much they're paying, etc. We've given specific numbers. I think we've delivered some real value in the terms of the fact here. In part 6 of this series, we'll be going deeper into website monetization tips. So, Matthew, if you've got any final comments on this episode before we go into the action steps from this episode.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, monetization is, you know, there's a lot more ways to make money from an email list than selling your products or being an affiliate. Your thank you page is probably one of the most valuable, you know, assets, your advertising assets your company has. So after somebody signs up for your mailing list, they land on your thank you page. That, you know, anybody that lands on that page has already shown they're willing to take action because they gave you their email address. So anybody that's on that page is very likely to take another action. So if you can put an ad on your thank you page, you can put an upsell to one of your products on your thank you page. You can put a co-registration advertising unit on your thank you page. You know, I might make as much as a dollar for every person that lands on my thank you page, just from that ad unit. So that could be, you know, that's $1,000 CPM, which is just unheard of in internet advertising. So if you're not using your thank you page, use that. Think about, you know, email ads and, you know, can I, you know, sell or rent my list? And there's just a lot of other ways that people are making money through email that, you know, somebody who just sells products and promotes other people's products might not be aware of. So do some digging and find out those opportunities and take advantage of them.
Yeah, and you can even do little list guarantees by having people subscribe to another thing of yours, like a podcast or a YouTube channel or a Twitter, so that if they do happen to unsubscribe, they're still within reach or they can be exposed to a different remarketing cookie, for example. We haven't even talked about that, but I imagine you're dropping a remarketing cookie on your site.
We don't do that. So, like, Perfect Audience and some of those are a little bit skittish about working with financial advertisers.
So there may be some constraints around who can use that.
Yeah, I've tried it before. I haven't gotten great results from it, so we just haven't really messed with it too much.
Oh, I've got amazing results from following up people who visit a checkout page but don't buy. and you can run really tight campaigns. I think I spent just over $1,000 on Facebook and sold 25 tickets at $1,000 each for my event, just from people who were on Facebook, who'd been to my checkout page but hadn't bought a ticket. So very small audience, very tight targeting, and a really specific message. So if your website is the type that you're allowed to do that, it's certainly worth looking into, and we'll probably revisit that in website monetization tips in part six. So Matthew, our next podcast episode is going to be side projects and why you shouldn't do them. We're going to look at a specific case study that you had that taught you a valuable lesson. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, and I do have a book coming out about email marketing. So everything we talked about today, I'll go over in great detail in that book. It's going to be called Email Marketing Demystified. And if you want to get a free copy when it comes out, just go to the domain myemailmarketingbook.com. Again, it's myemailmarketingbook.com, and you can sign up there and you'll get a free copy when it comes out.
Look at you, yeah? Always gathering that email list.
Yeah.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.